After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague Joe Healy, and we will be joined here in a little bit by Wake Forest right-hander Rhett Lauder, an All-American, who was joining us on our latest edition of the Clubhouse Conversation Series that we're running throughout the offseason. That's where Joe and I bring on a guest from around the college baseball world, and they break down little bit about 22, talk a little bit about 2023. And so we're looking forward to getting into Wake Forest today and doing that with the help of Rhett Lauder. It's the latest in the series. Like I said, you can find all of the previous ones, including Virginia Tech's John Scheff, Arkansas's Dave Van Horn, and Texas A&M's Jim Schlossnagel. Wherever you're finding this podcast, be that Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the old episodes are there. And if you hit that follow or subscribe button, you can get all future episodes as well. So make sure you're subscribed, and we'll keep doing this throughout the off season here. And Joe, it's been fun so far. It's kept us rolling here in August through lighter times in the college baseball calendar. And we record here at the end of on the last day of August, going into Labor Day weekend. So hopefully everyone can take this one with them wherever they're going for Labor Day weekend.
That's right. We roll into Labor Day weekend, which means, college football getting started in earnest. There was a little week zero. I watched a little week zero action, and happy Scott Frost Day to all those who celebrate. Watched a little week zero last weekend, week one coming up. So excited about that. Like there's definitely not a chill in the air here in North Carolina yet, but that is, I'm sure, coming at some point. But the farmer's market vegetables are changing. Like this time of year, you're getting a little more gourd at the farmer's market, a little less fresh fruit and tomatoes, things like that. So, and some of us are getting knee surgery as just like a rebirth as we go into a new season. So
it's the classic fall thing to do.
That's right. A little maintenance as we go into fall. Yeah. I'm undergoing a meniscectomy. It's hard a word to say. A little knee scope, as they say in the shorthand. I have a meniscus tear. I've been, as Teddy can attest, I don't think I mentioned it while I was, I don't know, maybe I did, because I was just like in such a, I was kind of grouchy when we were in Omaha, because like I was really fighting it in Omaha, and it's like limping around, and I think I aggravated a torn meniscus in Omaha. There was one time I bent over, my knee popped, it hurt more, like yada yada yada. But long story short, I been kind of like nursing a torn meniscus for most of this past year, and finally getting around, finally got some actual imaging done on it, and they were like, yeah, you're hurt. So going under the knife, not really the knife, they're arthroscopic, so it's like a one little tiny hole in my knee. They're going in with a camera and little snipping tool, and they're gonna snip away at my meniscus. So should be a quick recovery time. I will be back to being the explosive athlete that everyone knows me to be before long. The recovery time should be pretty short on it, but you know, again, a little maintenance as we go into a new season, trying to get healthy for the actual season in the spring.
That is what's important That's why we do these surgeries in the off season. For the podcast listener, Joe's going to play. We're going to play with the schedule a little bit, or Joe and I are going to play with our recording schedule. You will still get an episode next week if that's what you're concerned about. And frankly, if that's what you're concerned about, maybe reevaluate your
priorities. Jeez, like, give me some well wishes on my knee surgery before you're worried about just not everything's about you. That's a callback to an offline conversation Teddy and I had. Not everything is about you, listener.
It's true. A very recent offline conversation. if you are watching a little football this weekend, by the time that the games start, I'll have the annual list of the top baseball players playing college football this fall. Still working on the list, but some good players. Definitely, you know, it's not Kyler Murray out there. Like, we don't have a first round baseball pick who could get, you know, into Heisman contention if he plays well. But there's some football players out there to keep an eye on if you're into that this year. And among them, I would point out John Rhys Plumlee, who transferred from Ole Miss to UCF, where he was named the starting quarterback for the Knights. You've got Blake Shapen, who I don't think ever actually played baseball for Baylor. I think that football has taken up his entire time there, but was a pretty decent prospect coming out of high school. We'll see if Mizzou gets Sam Horn on the field anytime soon. He was nearly a top 100 draft prospect out of high school this year. He's going to be a backup to start the year at the very least for Mizzou at quarterback, but that's another one to keep an eye on. And I'll be interested to see how some of these other guys are used, starting, I guess, with Will Taylor, who we didn't see much of in Clemson in baseball last year because he was injured playing football. But he looked like an explosive, exciting player from what we did see of him last year. So hopefully he's back to full go. And what Birdie Brecht looked like. We saw Birdie Brecht throw 100 miles an hour for Iowa this spring. Now what's that going to look like out on the football field? So some intriguing things to follow if you're already following the football.
Quick update on Blake Shapen. It appears he was on the 2021 baseball roster. His first fall there at Baylor. I'm going back to 2022 right now. The other thing is that on his Twitter bio, his profile photo is him in a football uniform, or it's football related. He's throwing a football, looks like a 7-on-7 kind of thing. But his what do they call the photo at the top of your Twitter?
Your header photo.
Yeah. Is him like in a Baylor baseball uniform? So like I don't think we're going to see Blake Shapen on the field for Baylor baseball, but, you know, clearly he still considers himself, part of that group. And yeah, he was not on the 2022 roster. So that seems to kind of be the way things go these days. You know, you get these two-way players to campus and it kind of, you know, you'll see them show up on rosters and, you know, the best laid plans, yada, yada, yada. And then like the reality of the situation hits and it, you know, doesn't quite work out the way that certainly in a lot of cases, the players were hoping to be two way guys. And the realities of it are just such that it's hard to do. There's a reason it's not normal. Right. So, but it does appear that Blake Shapen still sees himself that way. And so just, but now his, being the starting quarterback at Baylor's is probably going to be pretty time intensive. I would have to imagine.
There was some game last fall. It might've been the Big 12 championship game that he like went crazy in the first half. And I was like, well, that's going to be the end of Blake Shapen's baseball hopes. Like if he's out there doing that, he like completed like everything but one pass or something silly. And I was like, people were going crazy because it was like, oh, like Blake Shapen's breaking out. Like, yeah. And I'm over here realizing like Blake Shapen's baseball career is probably getting put on ice right about now.
I mean, it's easy to say we have this conversation about this time every year, but it's like it's easy to kind of dream on these two-way players. And there's like a lot of wish casting among fans on stuff like, well, if we can, especially in baseball because of the limited scholarships, well, if we can get him on a football scholarship and we can just have him come over and he's basically like free, quote unquote, for the baseball team. And you know, first of all, there's power dynamics suggest that that's just a hard thing to pull off. But also, I think it's easy to underestimate just how I joked about it being time intensive for Blake Shapen to be the Baylor quarterback, but there is some truth in that. I mean, if anybody who was around for when Jameis Winston was doing both sports, I mean, they were moving heaven and earth to allow him to just close games. It's not even like he was a weekend starter. Like, they were moving heaven and earth. And granted, Jameis wanted to do it, and that was a big motivation behind it. Like, he was pushing that. But, you know, they kind of famously were like giving him special travel dispensation to be able to do both sports. And so that gives you an eye into, like, if you actually want to do this on a high level, it's really, really hard to do just from a time commitment standpoint.
I mean, Kyler Murray got flown in, like, some booster flew Kyler, like, in his private plane. I think it was after their spring game, so that he could play baseball against TCU one weekend, or maybe it was even just like Oklahoma had football practice and like he needed to be there for that, but they wanted him to be there for the baseball too. So like they found someone who could fly him from Norman to Fort Worth to play baseball. Like it was like, you do have to be on some level prepared to do that kind of thing if you're going to be like that high impact on in both areas. You know, sometimes the football team, that's especially true for quarterbacks. Like sometimes the football team just lets you out of the spring. Like, as I recall, Cole Kmet at Notre Dame just like basically didn't do much football in the spring, and that was fine. Like, he's a tight end. Like, he could get his work in some other time. But if we're talking about quarterbacks, and that's what Blake Shapen is, that becomes much harder to pull off. Speaking of quarterbacks, though, also interested about Jay Wolfolk at UVA. He was a freshman All-American on the mound for the Hoos, and you know, still not the starting quarterback. But I will be interested to see if he gets in the mix on the gridiron this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's an example of like he's kind of the exception that proves the rule a little bit, where you know he didn't play for the baseball team at all. Cause I at Virginia this season, he had a really good relief outing. And I asked Brian O'Connor about him, and it was becoming clear that he was going to be a big part of their bullpen plans. And he was like, yeah, Brian O'Connor said, I knew he could handle it and he could be an instant contributor in the situation. But like from the outside, it was easy to not view it that way because he was with the football team all fall. He did not throw a single pitch in the fall for the baseball team. And there's a lot of guys for whom that's just not going to work. You know, they're not going to be ready come February to be a big part of things if they've not picked up a baseball. And I'm sure in his personal life, Jay Wolfolk could pick up a baseball, but you know what I mean? So he is kind of the exception that proves the rule that it's just a really like you're going to be making sacrifices all throughout. And both football and college baseball, frankly, obviously football more than baseball because it is the behemoth that it is, but both of those sports are asking so much of the athletes, even in the off season, that like, it's just something that you have to really, really want to do. And also you have to be really, really good at both. And also, you know, it's kind of a unique situation that Jay Wolfolk isn't the starting quarterback and he's a very real prospect on the mound. And yet he still wants to do the football stuff too. So, I mean, that just goes to how much you have to want it and how unique it is that we still have players in that position, because like, let's be honest, it would be real easy for Jay Wolfolk to look around and be like, okay, well, I'm not the starting quarterback here. Like, I've got a future on the mound. Like, let's just do that. And yet he persists, but it kind of proves just how difficult this thing is.
Indeed. So, like Joe said, week zero, I kind of started the college football season last week, but this week is the real start. There weren't even any good games. Like I don't really understand week zero, but whatever. Not my sport.
You didn't enjoy Nebraska Northwestern? I thought that was pretty good.
It was like, I think it wound up being a good game, I guess, but like, it's hardly a matchup that like should be headlining a weekend. You know, like I was unable to get excited about the idea of watching Nebraska play Northwestern.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you. Like, so I enjoyed that game quite a bit. And like, you have to really, I think to truly enjoy that game on the highest of levels, you have to be bought in on just the narrative, as much as I hate to use that word, like the narrative of Scott Frost at Nebraska and all that entails. And I'm intrigued by that. So like, that's part of it there, but just from a football standpoint, like I think it turned out to be because Northwestern's offense looked competent, and this isn't a football podcast, so we won't break down whether that's a Northwestern thing or a Nebraska problem, but it ended up being, I think, a better actual game in terms of the gameplay than I anticipated. But yeah, I kind of was pseudo excited to watch a couple of the games later, just kind of talking myself into them. And by the end of the night, I was like, yeah, none of these were good. You know, even the games that were on paper, like even matches, you know, just were not all that intriguing. And, you know, the answer of why week zero is television. I mean, let's be real.
Well, but if it's television, put a real game on.
Yeah, no. Well, I wonder if I'm not, again, this is not a media podcast, but I also just wonder if like a little to some extent, like if you're putting things on CBS Sports Network, they're just never going to do big numbers anyway, but you could probably put whatever slop on Fox. And it turned out to be an intriguing game because people are just intrigued by Nebraska and that whole story and whatnot. And it's actual Big Ten conference game in Ireland, no less. But like, I do think there is something to the fact that like you could just put some whatever slop on Fox or ABC or ESPN on week zero. And like, I think it's going to do a pretty decent number. Like it's not going to do.
So, big. I mean, Nebraska did have 4 million people watch it. And part of that is because it was Nebraska. So good job on Fox. But then what was ESPN doing? Like, why can't they answer with a game of their own?
I guess
it's a marquee game of their own.
Yeah, and I don't know what the current rules. This is where we really start to get over our skis, because I don't know what the current rules are about week zero, because there used to be. So week zero started probably about 10 years ago, and it was always things that were getting, this is the second time I've used this phrase, special dispensation to do so, because it was the original Ireland game, like about 10 years ago, was like, well, we have to fly to Dublin. Can we do it week zero so we get a week off in between? And then it was like, well, Hawaii gets to play a 13th game.
And every team that plays at Hawaii.
Correct. And then that makes their schedule kind of congested. So let's do that on week zero and get a special waiver to do that. Because I remember watching Colorado play Hawaii one time on week zero when it was the only game in the evening. And I don't know what the current rules are about it, but I do still wonder if there is like you have to have at least plausible deniability for why you're doing week zero. I don't know, but I'd be interested to find that out, because I do wonder if that's somewhat limiting there. Or I do think there is a relatively significant chance at some point that the college football season just creeps forward to the point where we actually start doing week zero just becomes de facto week one in a lot of ways.
Well, we'll let our friends in the college football media figure that one out. For now, everyone is still trying to figure out a way to push the base. Well, I shouldn't say everyone. For now, college baseball discussion remains about pushing the season back. We don't have to worry about bringing it forward. There's no week zero in baseball. And for that, I'm pretty happy about that. We need all the preview time we can possibly get. And speaking of previews, we're going to get into a little bit of 2023 talk here in a minute about Wake Forest with Rhett Lauder. Wake Forest is one of the more intriguing teams when you look towards next season. They are ranked number 9 in our Never Too Early top 25. And they're just a fascinating team. They bring back an incredible amount of talent. They had a good season this year, and they're poised to, if they can just take that next step forward, a lot of these guys, to have an incredible season. It has the potential to be one of the best seasons in Wake Forest history. Maybe not the best. They do have a national championship, but this is a team that can make an incredible amount of noise. And it's a program that, you know, hasn't played at that level since 2017, really, when they went to super regionals and hosted regionals. So a fascinating time to look at Wake Forest. And that's what we're going to do here with Rhett Lauder, our latest guest on the Clubhouse Conversation series. And we're going to do that here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Today on the Baseball America College podcast, we're very excited to be joined by Wake Forest right-hander Rhett Lauder. Lauder was a first-team All-American last year, the ACC Pitcher of the Year, and Wake Forest made their return to the NCAA tournament. So a very exciting 2022 season, Rhett, and we're happy to have you here on the podcast, talk a little bit about that, and start looking to 2023 already.
Sure. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, as you went through last season, you know, it was a year that saw Wake Forest be able to return to the postseason. How much did that mean to you and to the team to be able to, you know, get the group back into regionals for the first time in a few years?
Yeah, it was definitely a good stepping stone for this program. None of the guys that were on that team have actually played in a regional up until that point. So it was good, and it's better to build on for this year. So now we've been there, now we can go and win it, or hopefully host this year and win the thing.
For you personally, it was obviously a big season, as Teddy mentioned. What was the big difference for you between your freshman season and last season when you made such a big jump?
Yeah, freshman year, I obviously was a freshman, very inexperienced. But I think the biggest step from freshman year to sophomore year was just I've been there. I've done it. I've pitched in, I made like 12 conference starts. So I knew what to expect. I wasn't just thrown in the fire. Obviously, my stuff picked up a little bit. I threw a little bit harder, et cetera. But I think the biggest difference was I've been there. I've done it. And I wasn't afraid of what happened.
You said you weren't kind of thrown in the fire last year, but you kind of were as a freshman. Just what was that like? Obviously, it was a very strange year all around in college baseball, but to have so many ACC games, to be a part of the rotation as early as you were, what was that experience like as a freshman?
Yeah, it was definitely a good thing looking back on it. But it was tough last year. It was up and down. We had a few injuries that put me in the rotation when I wasn't expecting to be. So I think me just getting beat up in some of those games was very beneficial for me, but in the time it was tough. I didn't understand. Like, I just felt like I wasn't helping the team win as much as I could have, but looking back on it, it's probably one of the better things for me.
This past summer, you spent time with Collegiate Team USA, not just here domestically, but also took the trip over to the Netherlands to play in Honkball Week, as they call it over there. What were the highlights of that trip to the Netherlands that you took with the Collegiate National Team?
It was a blast going over there with those guys. I made some of the best friends I'll ever have, and I got to take one of my best friends from Wake with me. Teddy came with me, so it was a good time just hanging out with the guys and also seeing different styles of the game. We got to see various styles of play, and it was really fun to play against the best of all over the world.
How much of an adjustment is that? You know, we talk about different styles and you know, everyone plays baseball a little bit differently. Everyone approaches, you know, hitters has a different kind of swing. How much of an adjustment did you have to make to your game, or what was that like?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. So I threw the first game against Japan, then we got there. So we had no idea what to expect, really, because we didn't really watch film going into it. We just knew we were going to play our game, and that should have been good enough to win. But when I got out there, you can kind of tell, like, the approaches are different. I feel like a lot of those guys use wood year round. I don't know if they use as metal as much as we do here in the States. So they're a little bit more adjusted to it. They know where to miss and know where not to miss. So it seems like they were a little bit more mature about their approach and the style of, like, not trying to lift home runs and stuff like that. That's just what I noticed from my game against Japan. And then there was obviously some other teams that had a blend of both, but it didn't take too much adjusting. It was just kind of interesting to watch.
Obviously, before you went overseas, you had a series of scrimmages in North Carolina, both in Cary and Durham, and then over in Charlotte. So you're facing off against other college players. Is there somebody you faced just kind of in those scrimmages that you thought, like, goodness gracious, I hope I never have to face this guy again? Like, I hope we don't end up playing them in Omaha or something down the road.
Yeah. Maui Ahuna got me kind of pretty good in Durham, and Wyatt Langford was always a tough at bat. I think those two were probably the two. Wyatt Langford was, I had to face him a couple of times. I faced him and we had a one inning stint, like practice inter squad before we had our first game, and I had to face him. And he was a tough at bat. So I would say one of those two guys. Everyone's good, but one of those two guys definitely.
Those two are definitely two of the better ones, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
As you now return to to classes and to fall ball and everything, just where do you feel like the group mindset of the Deacs is going into this fall and ultimately into 2023?
Yeah, so we obviously want to build on last year, what we built last year, but like on paper, and we look good because we didn't lose that many guys, but we don't play the game on paper. So we just want to continue going day in and day out, just completing whatever we have to do to get better. And if whatever that means right now for an individual's giving it our all, just getting ready for the season.
You alluded earlier to, a good friend of yours, Teddy McGraw, who was on the collegiate national team with you, obviously now will share a spot in the rotation with you back at Wake. You add to that group, Josh Hartle. Obviously people kind of know what he's all about. I mean, there's just a lot of talent in that rotation. What's the group dynamic on the pitching staff generally, but also among those guys who are going to be leaders in the rotation going into next season?
Yeah, Josh and Teddy, two of my good friends. Like, I hang out with Teddy almost every single day outside of the field also. So, like, it's just we're close. We know we're going to be in the rotation together for 2 years now, and it's fun to be pitching alongside some of your best friends, definitely. But also, I think going into this season with those guys, we had the same rotation last year, and they had times where they went through similar things that I went through my freshman year last year. So I think it's going to be really interesting and fun to watch what we all do with some experience under our belt this year.
The pitching lab that you guys all have the advantage to the opportunity to take advantage of down there. In what ways do you feel like that's been beneficial to you? And in what ways do you enjoy using all of the analytics and all of the technology that you guys have access to?
Yeah, I actually love it. So. But there's definitely a fine line during the season. I'm pretty hands off on all the analytics and everything. I throw all my bullpens outside, stay out of the lab for all that, just because I feel like there's not much I can do between a week to week basis to fix something that drastic. But when off season, like when I'm going to be throwing my bullpens here soon, I'll live in the lab. I love it, and there's a lot of stuff we can capture through motion capture and find some inefficiencies and ball flight data. A lot of stuff that could, et cetera, that is very interesting and I think helps a ton.
Did you have much experience with that before you got to Wake, or did you learn a lot of that in college?
I had no experience at all. I just, when I got here, I knew it was very interesting and I just dove in and learned everything I could and still learning now.
Did it kind of feel like you had been pitching,
I don't say wrong, but just like you felt like you had been blind your entire life and now suddenly you could see? Like, is that kind of what you would compare to in terms of getting all the data you had once you got to college?
Yeah, kind of. The way I saw it was it kind of just backed up what I thought I'd been doing for the whole time. So it kind of just like fact checked me. I was like, oh, this is why you have been doing what you've been doing. I knew I could do certain things. And then the data just showed me why. And then it also showed me that I was doing a lot of things wrong my freshman year. So it was good to see that early.
You mentioned the games aren't played on paper, but obviously going into the season with so much returning talent, with guys like you and Brock Wilkin and having so much buzz around them, there's going to be some hype on this team going into the season. How do you guys go about managing that both this fall and into the spring?
Yeah, there's definitely some hype for this team. We definitely have the talent too, but we just kind of have to stick to it day to day, not worry about the hype, because you know, that doesn't do much for us. We have to get in there, do the same thing every day, complete our process, and then see where that takes us.
So switching topics a little bit, you,
people might not know this, but you are an artist. You know, you enjoy painting and sketching and things of that nature. Now that you have the demands of being a student athlete and a very successful one at that, I mean, do you still have time for your art? Do you find yourself kind of wanting to have more time for your art? Kind of where are you as far as being able to do art with the demands of being a baseball player and an athlete at Wake?
Yeah, it's definitely, time is hard to come by nowadays, but there are sometimes I can dabble out. I've recently got an iPad, so I can do digital art that I've just started. That makes it a little bit easier, no cleanup. But I've been a little bit away from the art game for a little bit of time, but I still do it here and there. Definitely not as much as I wish I could.
Do you, when people find out that you are an artist and that you can draw and paint and all this, do they like ask you to do things for them and you have to like nicely tell them like, no, I don't really, because I feel like when people find out that you can do something like that, suddenly it feels like they think you're open for business for just kind of like doing all these little side projects.
Exactly. Yeah, that happens way too often.
You've been growing your hair out for quite a long time at this point. Are you still committed to the long hair game? And how much effort are you putting into hair maintenance?
Yeah, I still have it long. It's still long for now, but you know, I don't put that much care into it. Honestly, it's kind of just natural curls and everything. I let it take care of itself. I obviously keep it up and keep it clean, but other than that, it's like I don't know how, we'll see how long it continues.
When Rob Friedman compared you and Mike Clevenger on Pitching Ninja, what was your thought then, and how much of that did you feel like was hair related, and how much of that did you feel like was stuff or baseball related?
I have gotten some Clevenger comps for a while up until that point, so it was kind of cool just to see like it getting broadcasted over to social media, so that was pretty funny. But I think it was a little bit of both. I know the hair was a big part of it, but I don't know how much he was strictly on the stuff. I know he overlaid two pitches that were identical, but I think it was more having to do with the hair and the mechanics.
So we'll wrap up with the question that we ask all of our guests at the end of our episodes. And if I'd have been thinking, I would have gone back to see Coach Walter's answer, because we had Coach Walter on about a year ago and I forget what he gave the answer here, but we ask all of our guests to describe their favorite sandwich here at the end. And so I will filibuster for a second so you can kind of give that some thought if you need to, but we ask for their favorite sandwich, and some people give us a sandwich they make at home that they like. Some people give us a sandwich that they grew up eating, like that their mom made. Some people give us a sandwich they like from a local place, some place they pick up food from all the time. So you can take that in any direction that you would like, but please, Rhett Lauder, describe to us your favorite sandwich.
Gotcha. So actually my like pregame meal is always Jersey Mike's. I get a Jersey Mike's for every game. So it's actually the giant sized Philly cheesesteak there. And the giant is like 16 inches and I can never eat it all, but I continue to get the giant every single time I go.
You'd rather be overprepared than underprepared, right? When it comes to the sandwich. Right. Do they offer you like the Mike's way on the Philly, like with the oil and stuff?
I don't get it. I just always do the mobile order, just fill out my order.
Yeah.
The way it's coming and then go pick it up and come out.
I like my, I get the, like this is the turkey provolone. I like the Mike's way, but sometimes it's too wet. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about it, to be honest with you. But that's a good call. A Philly, if you can handle that kind of sandwich before you go out there on the field, then more power to you. That sounds like a good order.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's get this man some NIL money.
No kidding. Jersey Mike's, where are you at?
Well, Rhett, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Baseball America College podcast. It's been a lot of fun watching you the first 2 years of your college career, and I'm sure this spring will be a great time to watch some Wake baseball as well. So we'll be looking forward to seeing you back out there on the mound.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
Thank you again to Rhett Lauder for joining us here on the Baseball America College podcast and our Clubhouse Conversation series. Joe, let's get to the point here. And I don't know who, you know, Jersey Mike's, not a sponsor, but could be, and also could be a sponsor of Rhett Lauder.
No doubt.
And, you know, that's, I feel like that's a natural match, not just because he eats there, but Jersey Mike strikes me as the kind of place they're pretty aggressive. Like, but I see their commercials all the time and they sponsor a lot of individual stuff. Like it's a name I see out there. So like, there's definitely something out there for that for sure. I've not had the whatever phrase they use, like the supersized 16-inch sub or whatever. I've also never had the Philly from Jersey Mike's, but generally speaking, I will give Jersey Mike's my endorsement.
I just, I should say I've never had the giant sub either. I have had the Philly. I mean, I can't like endorse the Philly over other offerings from Jersey Mike's because I usually don't get it, but a giant Philly sub before you go out and compete in an athletic endeavor. I don't know, that just feels very impressive to me.
I'm always impressed by that kind of thing. Like I saw a video of the Cardinals pitcher Miles Michaelis the other day. They were asking, he got asked what his go-to pregame meal is. And he said like a cheeseburger and fries. And I'm like, I don't think I could do it, man. Now I'm not an elite athlete. So that, there's, you know, there's probably a level of, you know, what they're burning in their bodies is a lot more efficient than the way my body burns stuff. There's no doubt about that. Also, pregame could just be several hours before, like, you know, who knows? But the idea of running out there and trying to get on the mound after like either a giant Philly sub or a cheeseburger and fries just does not sound like a pleasant experience, but more power to them if their bodies can handle it.
Indeed. In terms of the actual on-field stuff here, that rotation fronted by Rhett Lauder, I mean, it could have, you know, Rhett Lauder had an incredible season, is a really high level prospect, deserves all the accolades that he got. Teddy McGraw, though, like slightly overshadowed, but if you talk to scouts, Teddy McGraw is someone that often gets brought up as like, you know, he's really good too. And Josh Hartle was like rated as like borderline first round prospect type coming out of high school. You know, he's a 24, not a 23 in terms of draft eligibility. But I mean, it's plausible that Wake Forest is running out three first round arms this spring. And I mean, that's a big part of the reason why they can be as good as we think they can be. Obviously Lauder has done it at the highest level already, but those other two guys, like he said, you know, that was kind of their first time pitching in the ACC. And like, he saw the growth from year one to year two. So if you get some of that growth, maybe not to the extent that he saw it, but even some of that growth from year one to year two from McGraw and Hartle, I mean, it becomes very fearsome for Wake Forest.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. It's just on paper. You know, it could be one of the best rotations in the country, and you know there are a lot of positivity about that group in general. Teddy McGraw, when I was working on collegiate national team prospect rankings, was a guy whose name came up as like, the stuff is good. Like, it's not that anybody was necessarily talking negatively about his stuff, but it was just like, he doesn't have the best stuff on the staff, but he's, you know, maybe the best guy in terms of makeup, in terms of like, you know, work, you know, just the work ethic piece, like having, you know, the mental side of the game, like all that kind of intangible stuff, like was just like the feedback on that was super positive with him. And they said it, you know, kind of allows him to pitch above what his stuff maybe suggests on this team anyway. Cause remember, the collegiate national team is like the guys who have the best stuff of the best stuff. So on that team, like he didn't have the best stuff, but everything else like allowed him to pitch above that level. And you know, Josh Hartle is the one where you're kind of looking at and wondering what that next step is. And seeing him last fall as a freshman, like you're immediately kind of impressed by, for lack of a better way of putting it, like you look at him and you can tell he knows what he's doing, like kind of the way he uses his secondary pitches and all that kind of stuff. And the key for him will just be, you know, much like Lauder from year one to year two, like the key for him will kind of be, can he control games a little bit better? Can he miss bats more often? Because his stuff is still coming along. And, you know, Lauder made that big jump, you know, jumped, you know, 6, 7, 8, up to 10 miles an hour in velocity just year over year. Does Josh Hartle make a similar kind of jump like that? You know, can he miss more bats? Can he control games? Can he dominate a little more? And if he can, like, oh my goodness, like this rotation goes from us talking about like this could be one of the best in college baseball to like very clearly is one of the best in college baseball.
I mean, you look at historic, like the Wake Forest pitching evolution has been very interesting to watch because, you know, they play in a stadium that is hitter friendly, but over time, part of that's the pitching lab. Part of that, I think, is just them being, you know, very deliberately trying to improve the pitching staff. You look at the guys that get drafted out of Wake Forest, it's now like pitchers at the top of the list. And they've produced several first rounders on the mound. And it's just been an interesting evolution. And now you look at the team for next year and the lineup is quite good. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, I'm not talking about it being the best lineup in the country. It just is a little bit of it's a bit of a surprise and it's a bit of a flip from like where they were with a Will Craig led team, for instance. And, you know, it's just interesting to have watched that evolution of the Demon Deacons program.
Yeah. And you kind of have to know the game, right? I mean, you look at the stat sheet and actually conveniently, you know, Lauder, McGraw and Hartle all gave up 9 home runs last year, which in Lauder's case, he threw basically 100 innings. And it's like, okay, that's not egregious, but you know, Hartle threw less than 70. And so 9 home runs, you're like, okay, well the team gave up 71 home runs and that was a pretty decent pitching staff. Right. So you just have to kind of understand that, like, that's the deal there is people are going to run into balls. People are actually, and more, I guess, more accurately said is that occasionally people are going to get a ball up in a jet stream and it's going to go over the 300-foot fence. Right. You know, like there's some pop flies that get out of that ballpark. So that's just part of the deal. And you're right. Like, I think it would be really easy for this program and this coaching staff to lean into, okay, we're just going to have to be an offensive team. And you could have a lot of success that way. But they've kind of gone the other way, which, don't get me wrong, they still do have really good offensive players. We'll talk about some here shortly. But the pitching is where a lot of that talent has been. And they really invest in the pitching lab. We talked about that with Rhett Lauder. And that's famously one of the most advanced pitching labs, perhaps the most advanced pitching lab in college baseball, to the point where people come from all around to take advantage of the Wake Forest pitching lab and be involved in it and learn from it. And so they've really leaned hard into an area that, like I said, it would have been easy for them to, this coaching staff, to kind of go, okay, well, clearly we're never going to pitch. Let's not focus on that. Let's have a power-based team. Let's be athletic defensively so we don't let anything drop in. Like, let's just say, hey, home runs aren't going to beat us. Let's pitch to that. Let's play defense to that. And they haven't done that. They've recruited and developed guys who become real dudes on the mound. And before, some of those guys maybe didn't put up numbers, but they had good. I think about Jared Schuster, who some of that was the COVID season, but, you know, his numbers didn't quite match the stuff. And, but he got drafted high. And so there was some of that happening at Wake where it was kind of like, okay, yes, it's an offensive environment, but even if you adjust for that, it seems like these guys should have better numbers. And perhaps, and now there've been some coaching staff changes and perhaps that's part of it, but with Corey Mascara now the pitching coach, but perhaps now we are moving into a period of time, you know, as we look at what Rhett Lauder did last year, where the numbers that these Wake pitchers put up are going to maybe start to more closely match what their talent level is. And that is what makes them really, really scary moving forward.
All right. So if that's the way the rotation sets up, they also bring back Camden Minichi, who was their closer a year ago. They get Crawford Wade back as well in that bullpen. They do lose Gabe Golub, who tied with Minichi for the most appearances on the team. But so your rotation's coming back. 2 out of your 3 best relievers are coming back. That's how the pitching staff sets up. Let's look at the lineup here. They bring in Bennett Lee, who we can kind of pencil in as catcher, as Brandon Tinsman moves on. So Bennett Lee, your catcher. Nick Kurtz returns at first base. Brock Wilkin returns at third base. The middle infield is a little jumbled right now. There will be some competition there. Danny Corona is back, and he was your starting second baseman a year ago. I think that he'll probably be competing with freshman Merrick Houston and Justin Johnson, who transferred from Lafayette. Those are the 3 guys who are probably going to play in the middle of the infield. Exactly how that competition plays out, I anticipate we'll find out this fall. Outfield, Pierce Bennett, Adam Searcy, Tommy Hawk, all back, as is Jake Reinsch at DH. So basically, that's a lot of returning players. It is a little, like, if you could pick, if you're just going to return seven regulars, I don't think that the two you would pick to lose would be your shortstop and catcher. In fact, I know you wouldn't. But still, it's an awful lot of returning talent. And, you know, those are high-level players. You know, Brock Wilken has incredible potential as a draft prospect, and you know, has hit a whole bunch of home runs there. He had 23 last year, and you know, Nick Kurtz was a freshman All-American. Tommy Hawk has that kind of production as well. I mean, there's just a lot of talent on the offensive side as well.
Yeah, quickly on the mound, one more thing before moving on to the offense. Like, the emergence of Camden Manassi as their closer last year was huge, because they went into the year probably thinking that that was Eric Adler's job. And Eric Adler, you know, it just didn't work out for him last year. Now he got drafted and he's moved on to pro baseball. So, like, all's well, hopefully that ends well there for him, and he continues on with the career that people thought he could have. But there was a lot of buzz about him going into last year, and it just, you know, ERA close to 9 and more walks than innings pitched, like all of it. So not an easy year for him. So Manassi kind of comes in and fills that role really, really well. And so I think that was a key piece of the puzzle that kind of got overlooked last year for Wake. So offensively, I think there's a couple things here. One is, like, Brock Wilken is not a fully formed player yet, I think. I mean, the power is what it is. Like, there were, again, going back to my collegiate national team stuff, like, there were obviously that the power tool is what stands out there. And there are some evaluators that think it's the best power bat in the draft. Certainly on the college side, that there's potential for that. But, you know, he hit 272 last year. The strikeout rate is still a little high. That's setting aside the defensive part, just offensively. So if he's someone who is a little, you know, puts together like a little better at bat when he's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark, if he can still continue to produce for power, but also just show a little more hit tool and feel to hit and do that, I mean, that makes him, that's going to make him even more dangerous there. And I think Danny Corona is an obvious, you mentioned his name, an obvious breakout candidate here. Had a fine year last year, especially when you, in the context of him being a freshman, but it's a guy who just highly touted recruit coming into last year, certainly looks the part physically, like the tools are there. So that strikes me as a guy who looks primed for kind of that next jump in a lineup that frankly doesn't need anyone. That's the beauty of it, is they don't really need anyone to make a huge jump to be really, really good. And if they do get jumps from different players, like, all of a sudden this does become a group that's particularly dangerous. And so, look, we, you know, the big picture thought here is that we've talked about this before on other episodes of the podcast this offseason, that, like, on talent, just on talent, like, this isn't an Omaha team. And there's a lot of stuff built into, like, being a little bit wary of betting on Wake Forest, fair or not. Certainly not fair to this group, because it wasn't, but, like, there have been Wake Forest teams that came in with a lot of expectation and excitement, and that just kind of flamed out for whatever reason in previous years. And so that's kind of what this program is working against, is kind of that perception. And again, that's not fair to this group of players, but it is something in the minds, I think, of folks like you and I who are trying to evaluate this team. But again, on talent, there's really nothing here that strikes me that would be keeping this team from being an Omaha level of team. That's how talented this group is.
It's not even so much that I worry about, like, the fact that you've seen some Wake Forest teams in recent years that haven't hit the highs. You know, coming off of 17, I think there was an expectation that, like, Wake Forest would, you know, keep climbing up and up, and they hit a speed bump, and that's fine. That happens to programs. I'm more concerned that, like, you know, as Rhett said, nobody had NCAA tournament experience before last year. And, you know, they went 1-2 in the College Park Regional, and, you know, that's fine. Like, it, as we now know, like, UConn was not a good 3 seed to be matched up with. And Maryland was a really, really good team in its own. So, like, it was a difficult draw for Wake Forest, but they wind up not having a you know, a long stay in the NCAA tournament, and now you're asking them to go out and get to Omaha. It's a lot.
for a team that just doesn't have a whole lot of tournament experience still, won't have experienced a super regional environment. Now, all that said, like, all the talents there, like, experience only helps you so much. They have, at some point, it's about the guys, and Wake Forest should have the guys. So I think it's a fascinating team to look at. It's a team that, if you look at our early top 25, if you look at wherever we put them in the preseason top 25, like the final preseason top 25, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be looking at them like, really? Like this team? There's going to be some skepticism. And like, I get it. You know, most of the time, the teams you see in the top 10 are teams that have been there and done that and are consistently doing it. But this is a group that has a chance to be really special. And I am going to be fascinated to see how they go about managing those expectations, how they go about, just competing at a time when they're going to be facing more of a target on their backs than they've been used to so far in their careers.
I think it's just a big picture thought
here quickly. My last thought too, is I think that would be Wake being that kind of good, challenging to get to Omaha. I think ultimately a good thing for the ACC to kind of get,
have a
team like that. That's not, you know, yes, they got one step shy of Omaha in 17. They've been good before. This is not a complete neophyte to the top level of college baseball, but it's a team that we don't really associate with getting to those types of stages. And so I think it's just really, really good for the conference if Wake could be the kind of team that we think they can be.
Yeah, I would absolutely say that that's true. I mean, the deeper the ACC can get, the better it is for them. And look, Wake Forest has been plenty good already, but it would be different if they were a team that was, fighting in the top 10 all season long. That's going to make everyone look at them differently and obviously impact RPI in different ways and all the rest of that. It would be a big deal for the ACC for sure. And I think it would be good for college baseball to see a team like that doing it. Yes, they're a power conference school, but it's also a school that hasn't been to Omaha since their national title in the 50s. To see that sort of thing is possible at Wake Forest. And maybe that's what we have to reduce our Cinderella hopes to anymore, is hope that these power conference schools that haven't done it in a long time can pull through. All right, that's going to do it for us today on this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast and our Clubhouse Conversation series. Again, if you're not subscribed, you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us and hit the subscribe or follow button. You can follow Joe and me on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And all of the work can be found over at baseballamerica.com. As things really get rolling here into September and into the fall, we'll have plenty more. I'm wrapping up the 2022 recruiting rankings now that everyone's on campus. Joe is wrapping up transfer class rankings. We'll have starting to look at fall ball as that gets underway around the country. So a good time to check it out if you are so inclined. We will be back with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast next week. And so hopefully you guys join us then. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.